You are listening to This Is Stockton, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Is Stockton. I'm your host, Wes Ray.
And I'm your host, Amy Alpers. As always, we would be so flattered and so grateful if you could all share this podcast, if you can rate and review us. Tell us a couple nice things about us in the reviews. Yeah. I'll share it on Instagram and, you know, gas myself up. So anything to get the word out. We're just out here trying to do the good work and spread the good news about the city of Stockton. So
extra points for mentioning Book Club and Boise.
Yeah, if you can, yeah, tell me about what you're reading and if you've ever been to Idaho and if you have a cat. Yeah.
Yes, book recommendations are key to this conversation.
Oh, yeah, I can't help who I am. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I am excited for our guest today. You know, our team had the pleasure of touring the San Joaquin County Historical Society and Museum, or just the museum, you can refer to it as, up at Mickey Grove Park. We did that in February. Yeah.
Yes.
The latter end of February. So here we are in April, and we finally got Philip here. But it was a great tour. I think it was the first time for some people on our team. But also, there's
not
just,
me.
You know,
I'm going to find a picture of me at Valley Days from like what grade? I think it's, I can't. Well, I'll wait and ask Philip what day.
I honestly don't know if we, I don't think I did Valley Days. And I went to Lodi, you know, because I lived in North Stockton as a kid. So what grade is that? We'll have to ask Philip. But anyway, what I liked about it and what we talked about actually afterwards when we came back to the office is that even though it's called the San Joaquin County Historical Museum, and it is technically located across our border in Lodi, it is really a very Stockton-centric museum. And so we really took a lot of pride in just learning more about our city and its history. And so anyway, without
shall we
ado,
say
Amy,
Stockton? Yes. It is the most influential community in San Joaquin County, probably.
Well, duh.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, without further ado, on today's episode, we will be talking to Philip Merlot. He is the executive director of the San Joaquin County Historical Museum in Lodi, quote unquote, North Stockton, as we like to call it. This museum has a ton of exhibits and artifacts, and it serves as a major role in preserving San Joaquin County's history. And Philip, before we get into all about the museum, will you tell us a little bit about your Stockton story, how you ended up being who you are in Stockton?
Man, that's a good question. Okay. Yeah. So how I ended up being, so
well, you're multi-generational. So you do have
I know. I know. You told us fifth generation. So this one's a loaded question.
Yeah. So my dad's family's from, if you go back far enough, a village west of Milan in Italy. And in the 1880s, there was a population boom, and my great-great-grandfather was the second-born son. And so him and all of his younger brothers trekked off. And of course, at that time period, if you wanted to trek off somewhere, you're trekking off to New York.
Yep.
Right? So eventually, they were working as coal miners and clay miners in St. Louis and Detroit. And then eventually, they made their way to Angel's Camp. And by the 1890s, my great-great-grandfather and by that point, his sons were in Stockton. And I guess my Stockton story, my great-grandfather was a rum runner during Prohibition.
Badass.
And used his assets that he accrued during that era to start a construction company. And he was the contractor that built the Port of Stockton, the buildings for the Port of Stockton. And built a lot of buildings in downtown, midtown, and central Stockton. He built Lincoln Center for Sims Kirby. And then his son, my grandfather, was an architect, mid-century modern architect, who studied under William Worcester, who the famous Stocktonian architect who invented the ranch house and was so influential in 20th century built spaces across America. And then I always grew up steeped in the history of the city. Learning things from my dad, learning things from my grandmother. And, you know, when I decided to come home after college and I was looking for things to do, I was working as a history teacher and I was writing articles and doing presentations about local history. And eventually the museum scooped me up. So here I am.
Incredible.
Yeah. Where'd you grow up in Stockton?
I grew up on Bristol Avenue. So just west of the Miracle Mile.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So that area. Very nice. Yeah. So All right. Well, let's get started to talk about what you do for a living. But let's start with telling us about the San Joaquin County Historical Society and its role in the museum, how it came about, and, you know, basically what it's here for.
Yeah. So in the 1950s and early 1960s, due to the policies of redevelopment and urban renewal that were promulgated by the federal government at that time, quite a few historic neighborhoods that were even considered historic at that time in the mid-20th century, Little Manila, Chinatown, the Japanese Quarter, Boggs Tract, historic Black neighborhood, those neighborhoods were getting demolished as part of like West End, East End redevelopment projects. And at the same time, the city and county governments were dealing with a lot of infrastructure, and as well as the school districts that were being demolished. Things like the schools, you know, Stockton used to have the most beautiful school architecture in the Western United States. Mm. Don't take my word for it. There's actually like, they won awards for the American Institute.
Philip, I would take your word on anything. You were so smart. I'm like, yeah, Philip said it. I believe it. Yeah.
You flatter me. Yeah. So, but you know, beautiful schools that, and of course, kind of the coup de grace for Stockton's built landscape at that time was the demolition of the San Joaquin County Courthouse. And so there was a lot of people that were really upset about the loss of heritage, and they started to organize and they formed various historical societies. There was a North County Historical Society. There was a big group of folks in Stockton that kind of referred to themselves as a Stockton Historical Society. They never actually organized and incorporated. The Lodi folks did. And when they just demolished that courthouse, the county government had stored its government records in the basement. And they didn't get all of the records out. And so there was an interesting movement of folks from the Stockton historical landscape that essentially were dumpster divers getting government records, you know, the sheriff's records, assessor, recorder, clerk stuff, the supervisor's minutes out of the rubble, right? And so by 66, those two organizations, the North County Society in Lodi and the Stockton Historical Society, they kind of merged. And started pressing the county government and said, hey, we've preserved all these records that you would have lost because you demolished the building without getting the records out. Can we get a museum and to preserve and display all this stuff? And then where they really got energized is that Charles Weber III, the state senator and grandson of Charles Weber, the founder of Stockton, he got involved and really seed funded that organization and also used his political power to lobby the county board of supervisors to say, hey, we need to build a museum. We need to preserve our county's legacy and history because this is a really valuable place within the context of American history. So that's the Historical Society. It continues to this day. We've got about 1,000 members. We've had anywhere from 500 to 5,000 members over the past 50 years. It's really much a grassroots organization. A lot of people that are supportive as donors, but also volunteering their time, mm-hmm. right? Whether working in the archives or running our educational programs.
Any insight to why people just thought there was no point in keeping that stuff?
That's so crazy.
It's weird, but I guess there was, you know, they were also tearing down history at the same time. So, I mean,
every day I want to erase my whole inbox and start over. So maybe it's something like that, like just like a fresh start. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. Yeah.
You know, I think that in the era before the internet, maybe people didn't think, you know, and there wasn't, it wasn't like information was available at people's fingertips. People might not have known that those records existed. Right. And the people that did know might not have necessarily seen the value. I mean, there are people that don't see the value of history, and that's cool. That's not me. That's probably not anybody on this podcast, but, but that is something something that exists. And, you know, for whatever reason, the records were left in the basement, you know, and that was basically the genesis of our institution is dumpster divers downtown Stockton, getting the sheriff's record books out of the rubble.
That's a very Stockton story. I feel like that still stands true. Very very gritty dumpster diving.
I don't know if we're creating any museums from here on out, but
yeah.
I loved it. So Philip, does your role as the executive director look like? What do you do?
Yeah. So my role is really, it's very manifold. So there's the operation side, and it's all the boring crap, managing the budgets, mm-hmm. overseeing the annual audit, working with our board of trustees, our, you know, essentially our nonprofit governing board, that to set the agenda, strategy, vision, and execute the strategy and vision of the museum. There's also a lot of community representation.
Yeah.
And totally. I think that when you're a community museum, it's really important that your employees and staff are out in the community, whether that's for, in my case, because I have written and presented, you know, in academic settings about Stockton's history and San Joaquin County's history. I'm oftentimes giving lectures at UOP or at Delta, whether to Ollie or to actual students. Also working with local nonprofits and businesses to really think strategically about how they can leverage their narratives to better tell their own stories. So that, yeah, that's a lot of what I do, but also it's going to events, it's promoting the museum, but more importantly, it's promoting this core message that we have, that the history of Stockton and San Joaquin County on a per capita basis is as significant or even maybe more significant than almost anywhere in North America. And like the sheer density of really critically important stories that have taken place here, whether that has to do with the development of the tractor and the bulldozer or the development of the California Delta, legacies concerning organized farm labor, the first Sikh Gurdwara and first large Sikh community in America, the largest Filipino community in the world outside of the Philippines, all of that, you know, Sperry Flower Products, you know, is, you know, was the largest company in California in the mid 19th century, late to mid 19th century, right? Those are really important stories that no, most communities would love to be able to tell about themselves. And here in Stockton, and you know, I'm preaching to the choir here because you guys are probably the best people at doing this, but we really need to do an active and proactive job of promoting our narratives and leveraging our narratives so that people feel civic pride in where they live, but also that people who come here want to do things here and learn more about the community, right? And maybe potentially even invest here. Because when you think about the history, right, it's just astounding what's happened here relative to similar cities in California or across similar size cities in California or across the country. Yeah. So that's a lot of what I do. And then lastly, we've got this big capital project plan. We want to redevelop our campus. It's a 10-year plan. It's exactly. A lot of that type of work.
So obviously, I don't want people to think from how the museum started that you basically just curate a collection of old books from a basement.
No.
So I after our tour, and actually we were there for 2 hours and did not even cover the entire ground. So obviously you have your, I guess you would call your primary building, which covers the history that has the Captain Weber exhibits and some other exhibits of some of the obviously early settlers with the Native American side, but then other settlers. But then you have a lot of buildings with a lot of great artifacts. So let's just give us a...
Let's walk you through.
Just walk us through what is there other than a bunch of old books? Because you do have old books. I mean, there's no doubt about that, but they're not really on display.
Yeah.
So talk about your collection.
Yeah. So our collection spans the gamut of recorded and unrecorded history here. We've got a great exhibit and collection concerning indigenous peoples, the Yokuts and North Delta Yokuts and the Central Valley Miwok. We've got artifacts and some stories concerning Jedediah Smith, the French fur trapper, the mountain man wasn't French, who made it to French camp and was became French camp and was the first Anglo person to get here. We talk a lot about Charles Weber and the founding of Stockton and the Weber family and their legacy and also their opulence, but also their philanthropy. From there, we leave the main building and we start looking in depth at the economic origins of the region. We talk about Sperry Flour Products and the major wheat production that took place here, the fact that it was the largest wheat producing county in the country for 20 or 30 years in the 19th century, and how that wealth combined with some fortunate state laws allowed for the Delta to be reclaimed, first through the backbreaking labor of Chinese farm workers and people who had been there for the railroad. And eventually, as more capital flowed into the region, heavy industry and the development of foundries. And so we've got a lot of exhibits and artifacts concerning heavy machines and materials that were manufactured in San Joaquin County over time, whether that's dredge buckets or tractors or wheat harvesters or tire molds with super mold there in Lodi. We talk about all of that. From there, we look at how the interplay between heavy industry and the reclamation of the Delta and irrigation allowed for the proliferation of small business farms growing specialty crops, things like grapes and peaches and walnuts and almonds. That's in our tree and vine building. We talk a lot about those different industries and viticulture. We talk about the culture associated with that, right? Whether that's fruit labels or, very like the Tokay Carnival and the different types of festivals that we have in San Joaquin County concerning agriculture. And then from there, we actually go and we have a whole quad of buildings dedicated to mechanical engineering. There's the Corda Posse Avancino building, which is kind of one of our crown jewels. And it talks about the innovations in cherry, walnut, tomato, dry bean, asparagus agriculture that took place here. We've got the Rosen building that really, it's essentially a exhibition on the history of tractor manufacturing in San Joaquin County. And then there's the McNeely building, which talks about the kind of the luxury industries that inhabited here, things like Stevens Brothers boat builders, right? And talking about the lifeways that existed as a result of the bounty of the land, right? So beyond that, we also have two houses on our property. There's Charles Weber's original cottage, which existed at Weber Point. Half the building burnt down in like 1890 or so, don't quote me. And the other half ended up at Mickey Grove Park in the 1980s. Then there's the Julia Weber house, which was Charles Weber's daughter's house that she rebuilt at Weber Point after the main house burnt down. And then about a decade later, she moved it to West Lane, and it was on West Lane on the Calaveras River for a long time. And then about 25, 26 years ago, the owners of the property were looking to tear down the building because they wanted to develop a neighborhood. And so we offered to provide it a nice home. So we've got some really cool historic architecture that's very representative of the early history of the city. But we've also got a lot of artifacts concerning the economic industries, the culture, the lifeways of the county.
I'm obsessed with the Julia house. Like when we were there too, I was like, Wes, was that on West Lane? Yeah. And like going through it. And I was like, I swear it used to be red. And Wes was
It used to be red. Yeah.
Like, because my dad, obviously Philip knows my dad. My dad's a history buff, who will be on the next podcast.
Oh my goodness.
And he would point it out to us all the time. That house used to be on Weber Point. And I just like, I don't know. When we were there the other day, I was like, oh my God, that's the house.
Because there is a house that was across West Lane that is still there, that it's surrounded by a subdivision. What house was that? Do you know?
I don't. I don't know.
It's another rich person, but it was the same thing. It was kind of like a house on its own in the middle of a field, and it's still there. They built the subdivision around it. Now it's their own little community center. But as a kid, we all knew the old Weber house. Actually, I think it might have been the West house, the actual West family house on the other side.
Yeah, I think it was the West house was on the other side, and then the Webers were. It was the Weber Kennedy Cahill. House,
right,
because the Weber Julia didn't have kids, but her brother's daughter's family, right?
Love it.
So,
love it. And the little, what's the trail called that the houses are on? Sunshine Trail.
Yeah, we've got the Sunshine Trail. So it's like
so
a,
lovely.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's wonderful, probably about 0.3 mile nature trail that takes people through the ecosystems of California. If you were going from San Francisco to the Central Valley and then the foothills, right?
It's so educational too. It's got little interactive parts. I was pretty impressed.
Yeah, it's got oral history components. You can sit on a bench, press a button, and hear a story.
That's cool.
And there was like native plants and stuff.
Yeah,
too.
It's all native plants. It's beautiful.
I love that stuff.
It's going to be even better. In the next 6 months, we're going to be spending some capital, putting some money down.
Yeah, capital project.
Yeah, and renovating the Sunshine Trail so it looks brand new again.
Awesome.
So
very cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So beyond just taking a tour of the museum, you guys do events. I hinted at Valley Days. What are the educational kind of opportunities that you provide outside of exploring the grounds?
Yeah. So we have our foundational programs are Valley Days and Pioneer School.
Okay. What grade is Valley Days?
Third and fourth.
Okay.
And Pioneer School's for third and fourth too.
So what's the difference? I guess you're going to tell me. Sorry.
Yeah.
Help me understand.
Give me a second. Yeah. So Valley Days is a program that is a living history program where for a month, students spend time in class at the school site learning about local history and California history. And then they know they're going to Valley Days. And so they dress up in 19th century clothing. So, so cowboy clothing, traditional dresses. It's multicultural. So, it's not just Western, European clothing styles. Yep. It's also people from Mexico or from other parts of the world. Then they show up and they magically walk back in time and they're at our site. And there's all these stations concerning different life skills and industrial skills that existed in 19th century California. Gold panning, blacksmithing, a cook shop, doing laundry the old-fashioned way, a print house. And so all of a sudden the kids walk back in time and magically their parents are also dressed, and they don't usually know this. Their parents are dressed in 19th century clothing and are actually teaching the kids the skills. So it's a partnership between the museum, which provides the infrastructure and the curriculum, the schools, which are teaching that, but then also the parents who are helping actually run the program. And so the kids cycle through these different stations, learning local history as they go, but also learning 19th century life skills as they go. So it's really interactive. It's really fun.
Do they still make butter?
They still make butter. Make butter. Yeah, butter the old fashioned.
I thought about that all day on our tour too. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like,
and we got to go back and make butter.
Yeah, I'm gonna go volunteer. Yeah.
Yeah. So we've served about 130,000 kids in Valley Days since at least 1991. I think the program started in 85, 86. The other program we have is Pioneer School, and so we have the Calaveras Schoolhouse, which is the oldest school structure in San Joaquin County, left standing. It dates to like 1866, 1868, and it was originally on the Calaveras River, east of Stockton. And so kids can actually go and take a day of school in the Calaveras Schoolhouse, being taught by a retired teacher who remains accredited, who's using the 1868 curriculum that was used in San Joaquin County, which is also living history as a different experience, but also really educational and valuable for the kids. So those are our two educational programs. We also have tours. We have trunks that go on, that are in circulation that go to the different classrooms. There's grandmother's trunk. And then actually what we're really excited for is that we're going to be probably at the end of this semester, we've got traveling gold sluices. So we've got a gold panning station on site, but we're actually going to be sending a gold panning station off site to schools around San Joaquin County, teaching kids about gold panning and local history, but also gravity, right? And the science of gold panning. So
that's awesome. And yeah. I bet not all schools can probably make it out there. I'm sure there's a, cost component to that. So it's cool that you're able to provide some of that stuff to the schools they can,
Yeah. Yeah. Beyond that, we have exhibits every quarter. And we have exhibits on site. We also have exhibits off site. So like in the Sikh Holy Month, which is April and early May, we've got a big exhibit that we put together that's going to be at the Sikh Gurdwara titled The Sikhs in America. And it's going to be on display to the public for the whole 6 weeks. So we do a lot of exhibits. Right now we've got San Joaquin on the Move. It's a history of transportation infrastructure in San Joaquin County. So a lot of exhibits, a lot of educational programs. It's really the bread and butter of what we do.
Incredible. That's fantastic. So when we did our tour, sometimes you'd mention little things, and going back to your collection and artifacts, you did mention that you had, I think you said you had the largest collection of Chinese opera gowns.
Oldest.
The oldest. So it was interesting. So first of all, a two-part question. How do you acquire items into your collection? And then can you tell us the oldest thing that you have in your collection?
Oh, man. Whew. Oh man, those are two very difficult questions. So the first question is that when people have super historically interesting things, whether it's something that's very common or something that's very rare, they will call us or email us. And so like literally every day every day we get offered a grand piano from the 19th century.
I was going to say, everybody thinks they have something really important. Yeah. In the
but you have to come pick it up from my house. Yeah. 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 Right.
But of course, there's only so many grand pianos that you need from the 19th century, right? Even if they're made with ivory and ebony keys and, yeah. you know, they belong to such and such mayor of Stockton in 1892, right? You know, there's only so many you need, right? But sometimes it'll be like a gold mine. So whether that is a collection of artifacts from Stockton Chinatown, or you know the first big Italian American community leader, A.E. Gianelli, he owned a grocery store in Little Italy, his family's papers, things like that, that are just what you would say, like somebody's cleaning out a garage and says, "Hey, this is really important, and we know it's really important, but we don't have room to store it. Can you come take a look?" Right. I think the craziest one is that like one time Charles Weber IV like sent us like 70 boxes of his father's stuff. And it was like, so Charles Weber III, state senator, right?
Yeah.
And just like they just showed up at our doorstep one day. And it was like, oh my gosh, right? we gotta process this, right? So once it comes to us, we process it, we figure out what's historically valuable. We have an inventory and cataloging process and we intake it. The oldest thing in our collection, man, the oldest thing in our collection is probably going to be an indigenous artifact.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I would say whether there's something called the Stockton pattern arrowhead, which is a type of arrowhead and pattern of arrowheads that were very common in this area, you know, thousands of years ago.
Yeah. Right?
And so that's something hundreds of years ago. And so that I would say probably one of those. You know, our indigenous collections, we try to be really respectful of the local tribal entities and their heritages and history. So, I think that we do comply with state regulations. But I think that I would say that one of those artifacts is probably the oldest accessioned. When it comes to recorded history, I would have to say it's probably something that belonged to Charles Weber.
No.
Cool.
That he brought with him from Germany.
So just real quick, what's up with these Chinese opera gowns?
Wes has literally been obsessed with those.
Oh, man.
I'm like, where I want to see them. They're not even on display. So
So there are these. So Stockton had was called Sanfo in Cantonese, right? Third city, and it was the third city in California settled by the Chinese in the 19th century during the Gold Rush, and so they had businesses and Chinese civil society here in the 19th century, including like opera and entertainment. And so we have the oldest Chinese opera costumes in North America that were like used here, right? Mm-hmm. And so they date to before the 1850s. They were like brought here, we think.
Wow.
You know, it's hard to say exactly where they were made, but they were probably brought here based off of the textile patterns and how they were manufactured. And so they're really valuable. They're priceless, actually. And of course, it makes sense that we would have the oldest because the ones in Sacramento would have been destroyed by the Great Flood of 1868. And the ones in San Francisco would have been destroyed by the Great Fire and the earthquake in 1906.
That's awesome.
And so just by historical happenstance, right?
Yeah.
We've got our Chinese artifacts are older than anywhere else pretty much.
Yeah. And actually we get for the podcast sometime, I have the book Sandfile and which talks about that history of the Chinese settlement here. And we got to find someone to, because I mean, that story alone is fascinating, being the third city settled by the Chinese immigrants. But anyway, yeah, thank you for sharing the Chinese opera gown story.
You have pictures of them?
Yeah, we do. It's kind of interesting thing because we do, as part of our major capital projects that we've got planned in the next 10 years, we do plan on creating facilities that are capable of displaying them on a routine basis.
Weatherproof, fireproof.
Yeah, but we get asked by museums back east to sell them.
Oh,
like
wow.
On a regular basis. And it's like over
leverage.
It's like over my dead body, right?
Yeah,
not at all. That. You know, we're not giving up Stockton's treasures, but But and they're
no, yeah. Drivers. Now we'll get people to travel from the east out here. To
see, visit Stockton. You guys are thinking about it, right?
We got it. Well, if you have any pictures you want us, if you have one you could share that we could share with the podcast, that'd be cool. But also we can hide it. Whatever you want to do.
For sure.
Okay, Philip, how can people support the museum, whether they're in Stockton or in the county or from afar?
Great question. So I think that when it comes to supporting the museum, the most important thing you can do is actually come visit us, right? And come check out our site, see what we do. We've got a great campus that's improving. We've got a lot of really cool exhibits. We've got great docents and staff who can give you an amazing tour. And like foundationally, like that's how you can support us, is coming and visiting. Beyond that, you can like and follow us on social media. You can join our membership and get our newsletter and get our updates. We have an academic journal that we publish every 3 months that gives a lot of fascinating information about the history of the county. And beyond that, if you're maybe visit or you join our membership and you really love it, consider making a donation.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And donations of funds, but also if you have really historic things
in some
of the history of this region. Maybe not. Maybe not a grand.
A little short. Oh,
maybe sorry. Not a grand. I wasn't paying attention.
But if you have historic stuff concerning the history of this region, like give us a call, because we are actively looking to always grow our collection, right? And when there are important things that document the history of this region and the heritage of this region, it's our mission to preserve them.
Incredible.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, and you can also find them on social, like he mentioned, San Joaquin History on Instagram, or easy to find on Facebook the same way. So yeah, that's a great way. Just to, first of all, just start following them, because you're going to learn something.
Yeah.
All right. So our last question is a question we ask everybody, and you can't use your own business as an answer. But where is your favorite place to take someone from out of town when they are visiting you here in Stockton?
Oh man.
can be food.
Yeah. So I hawk Stockton to all my friends. Like I single-handedly have a bunch of friends from the Bay Area who, when they're traveling to Lake Tahoe, they stop in Stockton for the food, because Stockton's food scene is the best kept secret in Northern California. So I'm not going to give a cop out, but I'd say Stockton restaurants as a whole is my answer to your question. I think that while we may not have like fine dining the way that like downtown SF has or midtown Sacramento, sure, our eateries are pound for pound as good as anywhere in the state. And I challenge anyone to prove me wrong, whether it has to do with like Don Rafa's Taqueria in downtown. Mm-hmm. Don Rafa's Al Pastor blows anything in the Bay Area, anything in the Bay Area out of the water when it comes to Mexican food. Go to Green Papaya.
Oh my God.
And get the larb or the calpiek, the soup that left Guy Fieri ranting and raving about how it was like the third best Asian soup he'd ever had.
Yeah.
You know, those types of places you just don't find anywhere else. John's Deli, how many authentic, true to form Tuscan delis exist in Northern California the way that they exist in Florence, like carbon copy of like a small town eatery in Florence or Lucca. So yeah, I'd say the eateries, one of those three places in particular.
Yeah.
No, we talk about that a lot. You can literally like taste the world in Stockton. It's a very easy way to, kind of immerse yourself in other cultures and whatnot. Yeah.
Since we're on it's the special topic of history, I mean,
Genova Bakery, right? Yeah, that's another one. Oldest eatery.
Over 100 years, yeah.
Yeah, and amazing bread. They're a place, they're classic. Swagat out on March Lane, my brother-in-law is from Kolkata, and that place made him cry. It was so
gosh.
Awesome. I haven't been there. Now
I'm writing this down.
Yeah,
Swagat. Have I been to Swagat?
Swagat on March Lane, that place.
That's by the Hilton, right?
Yeah, that place.
Oh, yes, I've been there.
It's Madrasi food, and my brother-in-law went to college in Madras in southern India, and that place this reminds me of back home.
See, I don't even.
And they
think
have
about
a lunch food buffet still. I feel like the lunch buffet is dying, but
COVID.
Swagat still has it.
Yeah.
So if there's a buffet, I'll find it.
The eateries. The eateries.
You are not wrong.
Incredible. There. Well, Philip, this was amazing. You are awesome. We are like super fortunate to have someone in this town who obviously is very excited and proud and prideful of being from Stockton, but then gets to use that energy for good in their profession and share it with other people and just, I don't know, sculpt the minds of young people and everything else. So we're very grateful. And thank you for being on the podcast with us.
Yes. And hopefully the folks who listen to this will go out and first of all, make a visit. You know, they're one of the greatest, probably underappreciated assets at Mickey Grove, because I think people forget Mickey Grove has an incredible museum. So get out there, support the museum. And actually, before we leave, a great way to do that would be, if you like the holidays, go to Festival of Trees every year.
Yeah, we've got this great holiday festival every year, first weekend of December.
Yeah, and it's best time to come. Excuse to go to the museum if you haven't been there.
Actually, Philip, what are the hours of the museum?
Yeah, so we're open from 10 to 4. Thursday through Saturday, or Thursday through Sunday, excuse me.
Okay, awesome. Perfect.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you again. That was awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. To see all the events on the city's largest events calendar, check out visitstockton.org. And when you are there, you can sign up for our weekly events newsletter.
And remember to find all the supporting images and insights at This Is Stockton Podcast on Instagram, and check out thisisstockton.com and find all of our podcasts that you can listen to, and be sure to subscribe and share again all the places you take in podcasts, and follow us at Visit Stockton on all those channels. And we will see you all soon.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to This Is Stockton, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. Hosted by Wes Ray, Amy Alpers, and Anthony Esteves with Visit Stockton, and produced by Relic.